Welcome to Mom Friends. We are two longtime friends, Laura, who is a pregnancy and postpartum doula and mom of two,
and Raimi, who is a first-time mom-to-be, and we both get together to discuss the journey from preconception through pregnancy, postpartum, and beyond.
Join us for weekly raw conversations and relatable struggles on how this life-changing event impacts all areas of our lives.
Let's begin. Hello, welcome back to Mom Friends. Raimi is here at 25 weeks and she's back from her meditation retreat. Hello, Raimi. How was it?
Hello. It was so nice and lovely. You know, the first 2 days that I was there, I felt this sort of like resistance in my body and my mind. Like I'm out of practice. And so getting back into it took a couple of days. I would say I kept thinking in my head, I've already learned this material. I've already done these same meditations. Like, I'm probably not going to get much benefit from it. Maybe the novelty has worn off. And I think as I was sitting there training my mind and quieting it down hour after hour, by the third day, I felt like I broke through. And I'm like, okay, this is why I came here. Like, I'm starting to see a clearer vision. I'm starting to really open up my heart and feel into that more. And I got what I was looking for. And yeah, it was wonderful. I think towards the end, I was like on a high, felt exactly how I felt the first time I left the meditation retreat. And it was awesome.
And one of your goals there was to visualize the imagery that you're going to use in labor for you to calm down and like be in your own bubble mentally. So what was that?
Yeah, so that also came to me, you know, in my meditation. I was grounded, standing 2 feet in the sand, and it was like a stormy, cloudy, moody day. And I'm looking out of a pier. I'm holding my baby girl's hand in my left side, and I'm holding Nate's hand on my right, and I could clearly feel the difference between like Nate's masculine hand and then her little hand. And we're just all looking out, all three of us out onto this horizon that is the ocean. And we're all like just in this, we're going to conquer anything life throws our way. Like we feel whole and complete, and like it's us three. And it was just a simple visual of that. The more I meditated, the more that it got that, the more I was building on that visual. So I started seeing Nate holding my mom's hand and baby girl holding my dad's hand. And we are all five looking out now, and we're on a family vacation. And that never dawned on me that that is a possibility in the future that I actually am really excited and look forward to doing is going on vacation, us five, right? My dad and Nate are very similar where they love to work and they don't take vacations, but to have them two there for her just felt so special to me. And that was just like an amazing visual that I held on to. So that's something I will definitely be tuning into when I am in the middle of contractions.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah. And obviously also it gets you excited and happy. And that's exactly the mood and the mindset you want to be in labor. So that is the feelings you need during that contraction. So that's a perfect visual. And maybe your dad and Nate, maybe they're not excited about traveling, but maybe now, mm-hmm. because she's here,
for her.
Yeah, they're going to do it for her and they're going to be excited to travel now.
Yeah, it was exciting. And you're like, you're in LA then. And I'm like, no, it doesn't have to be limited to LA. It looked like we were like in a rain, like, you know, Oregon beaches where it's very moody. It wasn't like your typical tropical white sand turquoise water.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a very moody, but like, I liked it.
Could be anywhere, really. There's so many different places in the world, but that's more possibilities. And it was your birthday, you're 36.
It was my birthday. Yes, and that was awesome because I ended the last day of the meditation retreat. So I wanted to stay as long as I can to get in as many meditations that day, but also not hit traffic on my way back because I was coming from Dallas. But yeah, no, I felt like I was floating and just in this amazing headspace where when I would turn on the music or I was driving and looking at nature, everything was so vivid and bright and all my senses were just heightened. It feels so good. And then I came home and I wasn't expecting like anything. And then surprise, like there's balloons and cake and my two friends had set this all up.
And how amazing is it that last year on your birthday, you literally got surprised by an engagement party and an engagement. And full circle a year later, closing that 35-year-old chapter, now you're married and have a baby on the way, opening a new chapter for your 36. How incredible is that too, right?
That's so true. Because when back then at 35 last year, I started IVF the next day on the 29th. And who knew that it would be a whole year later, which I'm grateful that it wasn't longer than that. I mean, there's some people that go through it longer. But even then, it's like you don't know what that journey looks like for you. And it is crazy, a whole year later that we're here now. It feels surreal. I'm very grateful.
Yeah. And that IVF chapter for now, it's closed and you're pregnant and married. It's kind of like the end of that era and the beginning of a new one. And 36 is going to be so special. Yep. So excited for you.
I know. That's the meditations were like, too. It was like, what do I want to feel into this new chapter? And like, how do I want to close the last? And it was just a very perfect birthday / transition, turn the chapter type of meditation.
Mm-hmm. And last week, we began talking about the birth plan and Raimi's birth plan, specifically what her goals and wishes were for early labor. So today, we will continue going through the birth plan, part two, and we will cover so much more, including active labor options, pushing, birthing the placenta, immediate postpartum options. So let's begin maybe with pain relief. That is where we left off. So maybe, Raimi, explain your goals when it comes to pain relief options, the ones that we already talked to you and me in class.
I think this is like the biggest topic when it comes to labor is like how much pain or like your mentality around pain. That's what I'm learning. It's like you can look at it as pain or you can look at it as like you told me, like every contraction you're feeling is bringing the baby down and closer to the moment you get to meet them. So it really is a mindset shift around the word pain. But there are some things that you explain that I feel I would love to explore. Okay, the first one is hydrotherapy, which is going into hot water of some sort, whether it's the bathtub or a shower if you don't have access to a bathtub. My birthing suite will have a shower at least. As long as I'm not monitored and hooked up 24/7, I'm hoping I'll be able to hop in there when things progress to get some relief. But you did water birth. So, I mean, I know for you, it was like a game changer the moment you stepped in there.
100%.
That's what I hear.
And I can tell you when I was laboring at home, early labor, it was much worse and intense than when I got into the water. It just gives you that sense of obviously a natural pain reliever. It does minimize the pain. It also allows you to have more movement, be less heavy. You can still move different positions inside the tub, and it just gives you such a peace already. It's a great little peaceful environment. So it's very calming. I loved it. I swore by it. It's my only pain relief option that I used on my two natural labors, and it was amazing.
I almost feel like by having your perineum like already wet and warm, it like helps also not tear so hard. It's like if you're dry, you know,
it's very warm, and so it does open up your muscles and it just helps you open up in general. So yeah, I did not tear, and I give credit a majority and big part to hydrotherapy for not tearing, for sure. Yes,
so I definitely want to take advantage of the shower. And another thing I recently got on Amazon were combs. Focus the pain on something else. So you just squeeze these plastic combs as hard as you can on your palm. But that's basically the relief of that. So I have combs. I'll bring that. Counter pressure is going to be huge, whether you're doing it or Nate's doing it. Like that could be a great Nate job while I'm going through a contraction, right?
Yeah, I think it'll be a good focus for Nate to be doing something and help for you.
Yeah. And then nitrous oxide. I do want to try this too, the laughing gas.
Did you ask your medical team if they offer it in your hospital?
I will. I haven't seen them yet since, but it's on my list to ask.
Okay, because that is not given in every single hospital or birth center. So it's definitely something that if you want to try, ask. It's not 100% everywhere. So definitely ask that. Yeah. But it basically takes the edge away. So you still feel the pain completely, but you're more like kind of high or drunk a little bit. So you don't feel it so intensely because you're not so present, but you're still moving and doing all the things. So that's the goal with the nitrous oxide.
And then the TENS unit. So that's like an electromuscle stimulator, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Nate used to use that when he was competing in CrossFit all the time. And I've tried it myself. It kind of feels like electricity running through your muscles and like twitching them. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll get it just to have it. I might be annoyed of it. But I mean, it doesn't... Did you use that?
No, I never used that. Basically, what it does is it kind of creates a block between your pain receivers in your brain. They say it makes you not perceive pain as much. Okay, I had never used it. I never wanted to try it. I was in the tub. I was dealing with everything inside the tub, and it's not something that you can do inside the tub. So I was not even interested in trying anything else at that point. I have not seen many, many people use it, but I think that if you want to try it, it's like another easy option to have. And why not try it, right?
I'll take it with me. I'll have it in my bag just to, and you know, if we're running out of options and the only other thing is like epidural, I'm like, okay, let's try that TENS machine.
Right. The thing too is that we tend to think that pain reliever in labor is the epidural, right? And of course, it's one of them. But there's just so many. Look at all of the things that you've already mentioned that we've mentioned in class. There's so many options that you can try before you get to the epidural. And by trying all the options, it also allows you to progress more before you get the epidural, which is also a better turnout for the epidural.
I'd say, one, you have to have a different mindset around the quote pain, and then two, like, some people may not just want to feel any pain, and that's fine, you know. But if you are like, for me, it's like I've learned some of the benefits of not having an epidural so early.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I'm trying to, my goal is to, you know, push that as far as I can and do labor naturally as far as I can stand, so, and that's why I'm looking into all of these other options. Obviously, you'll still feel the pain, but there are just other options to get your mind off of it. So
other options that you can use, other than the ones that Raimi mentioned, hot cold packs, that is really easy, heating pad or cold towels. You can also buy on Amazon those packs that you break and they turn immediately cold or hot. That's really easy to bring with you everywhere or use at home. And you can use them in so many different places. You can use heating pads and cold pads in your back if you have back labor to either kind of numb the area or just relieve that pain, that cramp that, you know, you feel as well. And then you can also put it in your neck if you're sweating or throwing up. Your body will also tell you what you crave and what you want to try. So I always think that is another great tool to have.
Does the hospital provide these for you?
Yes, the hospital tends to have cold packs, hot packs. It's also great for early labor. So if you can have it handy, like if we go to a hotel room, why not bring also those Amazon packets? Why not have it? IV pain meds, which obviously you have to be in the hospital to get, but typically, people go straight to an epidural if that's the case. And then sterile water injections, basically sterile water injected into your back, not in your veins, but it's injected in your skin. It can burn a little bit, they say. It takes the edge away from the back pain for at least 90 minutes. So it's another natural option to try if you want it. I've never tried it before.
It's like if I'm going to get a needle at my back and it's only going to give me 90 minutes... I don't know. I feel like if I'm going that a needle in the background, I'd go epidural, but that's just me.
Well, it's a completely different story. It's very small needle. It's a tiny shot.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's not a medicine. It's sterile water, right? So it's a natural pain reliever. But also not everyone has pain in the back when they're in labor. So we're talking about a lot of options for back pain, but you may not even experience back pain. The contractions may be in the front only. So you have to play it by ear in that sense as well.
And then there's the epidural, obviously. The one thing you gave me as a forewarning is like, yeah, okay, you might get to a point where you're like, oh, shoot, I need the epidural right now. But then how many other laboring women are there? How busy is the hospital? Is the anesthesiist ready to go for you? How long is the wait? And so that all varies. And so just keeping that in mind as a heads up, you know, you may need to wait.
And then it takes another 30 minutes to kick in, you know, and then it may not work and they may have to put another epidural in. So yes, it is a process for the epidural. It's not so immediate in all cases. And so one thing that I do when we get there, I also say, hey, what's the waiting time for an epidural today? Like, how are things going? How soon do we need to ask for it? Because sometimes, yeah, as you said, there is a wait and then there is the time that it kicks in and the time to administer it is something to keep in mind for sure.
And like people that have gotten epidural say it's wonderful. Do you know what I mean? Like if you've been laboring for hours and hours and hours and you want some sleep, that is probably such a great option. Even though it can slow down your labor, mm-hmm. or it can progress. I mean, it just depends on where you're at. But that is obviously a very popular option in terms of pain relief.
Yeah. The other thing that an epidural can offer as a benefit is that you may be very tense through contractions instead of relaxing, which is what your body needs through contractions to allow the baby to progress and calm down more and more. And so sometimes you're so tense and so in pain and so yelling because you maybe don't have as many like mindset techniques and you're not so ready. And that tenseness doesn't allow the labor to progress either. So sometimes when people get an epidural, if it's not too early, it really helps them relax and allow the process to speed up and progress. Mm-hmm. And so, sure, we need to not get it too soon so it doesn't stop labor, but also sometimes we do need it to relax and progress as long as we have like the right movement still through the epidural, the right position. So we allow the gravity to still do its thing, which is something we also talked about.
Yes. And that's something I didn't know was that even if you get the epidural, you could get a maybe a more mobile epidural if your doctor has it. So at least you can move around and you're not mm-hmm. completely numb.
Yeah. So what I also always say while we're doing the birth plan, ask your medical team if the hospital that you're going to offers a mobile epidural, which allows more movement. And if they offer an epidural that you can monitor the level of intensity, because not just through pushing, maybe you want to move a little bit and feel your legs a little bit more in certain points of labor and you want to lower it and then, you know, rest again. So it's definitely two things that are key to ask when it comes to an epidural. So let's move on before we talk about positions. Let's move on into nutrition. Obviously, depending where you give birth, there have more rules when it comes to nutrition, because if you have a chance of getting a C-section, you can't eat before a surgery, right? So then they're more strict. So usually hospitals are more strict about eating during labor because they know there's a chance of you getting a C-section. So home births, birth centers usually have pretty much no rules. Hospitals are more strict. I would definitely ask for your options, but there's a lot of different options when it comes to nutrition. From everything that I mentioned in class, what are your goals? Then later, maybe I can give some other tips.
Well, so I know that once I get to the hospital, I'm not allowed to eat solids. And that's why my doctor recommended I labor as long as I can at home. Obviously, some not in solid items are coconut water, yogurt, applesauce, smoothies, honey sticks, which is great. But sometimes when you're laboring for so long, that's like not enough. So I'm a little bit worried about the nutrition side of things.
Yeah. So for me, the biggest tip is before you leave the house, before your labor picks up, have a big, nutritious, fulfilling meal with protein, healthy fats, carbs. Fiber is also great because going to the bathroom postpartum is also hard. So having something ready before labor really starts kicking up in intensity is great. However, you may throw up in labor. You may not want to even eat through labor much. So the goal is to keep fueling and replenishing your minerals and nutrients, but without big, big foods. So through the active labor, really, you're not probably going to want to eat much. So as you said, I think honey sticks are great. Electrolytes, whether it's coconut water or just powder in the water and ice, is great. Nuts, little pieces of nuts are really fueling as well. They also serve those little peanut butter individual packets that you can just pour into your mouth. Same thing as the honey sticks. So I think those are great. And then maybe protein bars as well, which are still like maybe nut based.
Okay.
Those things are great. You probably are not going to want to eat much, but just like those little bites here and there that give you the energy. But for sure, electrolytes coconut water, I think, is super important to keep hydrated and replenished. So let's move on into laboring positions. So we talked about, you know, wanting the mobile epidural to continue moving a little bit through labor or changing positions through labor. So is there anything that has caught your attention of everything that we spoke about when it comes to moving while we labor, whether it's in class or the birth videos that you've been watching?
I think it's that your body knows how to get the baby down innately.
Mm-hmm.
That is the number one thing. And it's like, yeah, so that's another benefit of not having that epidural so early on, is being able to feel into what feels good, what doesn't feel good. Because otherwise you may feel like, oh, you're only restricted to the bed on your back. I see a lot of women laboring in a squat position, using gravity to pull the baby down, or on all fours. I see that a lot. It's opened up my mind to not just laboring on the back, for sure. And then that's something that I'm going to have to figure out when I'm there and listen to my body cues, you know?
So you're 100% right. When I was in labor without any drugs in my system, feeling exactly all the contractions, I knew exactly how to position myself through each contraction, whether it was all four, squatting. I kept moving by what my body told me. So in between contractions, I relaxed, and relaxing was on my back. So every time the contraction stopped, I just turned around and laid on my back and rested. Mm. And every time the contraction started and I felt it start, my body would already tell me how to position myself. And that is something that amazed me after my first birth, after the first time I've experienced it, because I was like, oh my gosh, I knew exactly what to do. My baby was telling me,
yes,
how to rotate, how to position my body so that I could allow the baby to calm down faster, which obviously made the birth faster too. That is key. And one thing that I saw too is that, yes, through the contractions, I never once wanted to lay down on my back. So that's why you also need to make sure that when you are using the epidural, you most likely will want to lay on your back. But there's a few things you can do, like put the bed a little tilted so the back is reclined up and you're not laying flat on the bed, but you're laying kind of like sitting up. So that already allows you to have a little more gravity than just laying flat on the bed. And something else you can do is put a peanut ball or some pillows in between your legs to open up your hips. So sure, we want to rest during the epidural because that's the goal, to rest and relax and recover. Mm-hmm. But also we want to still give your body that movement and openness that the body needs so that it can progress, right? So that's key.
And like, piggybacking off of how you know we're talking about innate, like we just innately know how to push the baby out. I see it every day with the sheep. Like I'll go over and I'll see that the sheep found a rock to prop its hips up because it needed to position itself in a way that the hips was higher than the head to get this big baby out. It, like the sheep just knew what to do. And that's that innate intelligence we need to trust into, right? So
yeah.
It's pretty cool because we're animals, you know? Another thing you mentioned was, you know, taking a toilet break, not only, you know, to go number two if you needed to, but you said it's like a dilation station.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love the toilet. It's not the most comfortable per se, but something that the toilet, just sitting on the toilet while you're in labor through contractions, go there for 3 to 5 contractions. It really helps you dilate, open up. It gives you also a very supported squat position, which is a great one. It also relaxes your pelvic floor because it's something that we associate with when we sit down in the toilet. It also empties out your bladder, so it creates more space. Obviously, you can go number two too if you need to, which a lot of times we do during labor. And yeah, it's just a great place to progress really fast. And so although it may not be the most comfortable, it is a great thing to try every now and then. And you can not only sit in the toilet like we sit normally, but also you can sit looking backwards and put a pillow maybe. And so you can kind of lay on the toilet.
It's a good tip.
So moving on to pushing, typically we see the movies that women are pushing on a bed on their backs with their legs open and surrounded by a ton of doctors, nurses, students, random people, and just pushing
holding their breath sometimes, turning red. We know now that that's not the most effective way to push for mom or baby. That can actually make pushing much longer. It also increases the chances of needing forceps and vacuums, as well as increases the chances of tearing. So what are your goals from everything that we've explained in class when it comes to pushing and knowing all of this?
So again, like your body will give you that urge to push. And like you said before, when baby's going to come out, it's going to come out. Mm-hmm. There's no holding it. It will come when it comes. And so waiting till you get the urge to push, even if you're already at 10 centimeters, is great. So that's all I have to say about that.
And you feel it. You feel it. You know. No one tells you when to go to the toilet number two, right? You just know. So same thing here. It's like we know. We know what to do. So.
Exactly.
So when it comes to pushing, first of all, the 10 centimeters can be relative. It's not an accurate measurement with a measuring tape. It is finger-based. And so one person can tell you you're 9 and one person can tell you you're 10. Another person can tell you're 8 at the same exact time, right? So the best, as you said, it is to wait for the urge to push because your body knows when the body is ready. And the other thing to remember, yes, the contractions push the baby out. There's nothing wrong for waiting until that really big urge to push, which is why I do recommend lowering the epidural intensity so that you feel the urge to push more. And guided pushing is also not ideal. It's just best for you to feel the urge to push in each contraction. And then another one, as we said, the position is really important too. Using gravity, trying not to be on your back, putting lots of pillows and tilting the bed up. On the hospital bed, I think when my clients have used the bars that you can attach to the bed, that has always been incredible and faster.
So that's something I want to ask if my hospital has too.
Yeah, I'm sure the hospital will have it, but it's definitely good to ask.
Oh, but obviously if you do have the epidural and you can't feel your legs, you're going to have guided pushing, right?
Yes, yeah, you will, for sure. And then something else that it's good to add into the birth plan is if you don't want the doctors to do an episiotomy, if you don't want to use the forceps or the vacuum, all of that. It's important to also add those things. Like maybe the hospitals won't do it as a routine procedure, but maybe they'll use it more easily than other hospitals. So maybe adding, you know, I don't want forceps, I don't want vacuum, I don't want an episiotomy, unless it's a medical emergency. That's always good to add because you never know their procedures and how they do things. Or if you want to not be guided when you push, that's also something good to add into the birth plan, because that way the staff there knows that you don't want to be told when to push.
Yes, they literally cannot rush me out of that hospital, okay? Sorry.
And then after the baby comes out, there's a lot of options too. But first, let's remember that the placenta comes out as well. We don't talk a lot about this, but yes, once you have pushed out your baby and you're in that high and cuddling your baby, you still need to push out your placenta, which is an organ you created to support the baby. So there's a few options after that. The first thing is natural expulsion of the placenta, or sometimes they give you Pitocin to expulse the placenta. Is there anything that you think about that and your goals with that?
I'm just hoping it comes out naturally, right? Like 30 minutes later.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully it's just like that. And then I'm just so lost in the bubble of seeing the newborn that hopefully it's not as painful as the baby coming out.
No, it's not. No.
It's not, yeah. And then I also asked my doctor if she does delayed cord clamping. That's definitely procedure now, just to wait for the baby to get all the nutrients in the blood before cutting it. And then I think Nate will be the one to cut it.
Mm-hmm. Something to mention in the delayed cord clamping, though, some hospitals say that they do delayed cord clamping, but then delayed cord clamping is a generalized term. And you don't know if that means 2 minutes for them, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. You don't know what that means, right? Everyone can think that delayed cord clamping is a certain number. And so what I would say here, if you want to do all the nutrients and to wait until the end, you should say, I want to wait for white.
Okay.
And it's something that I always tell the partners to also be aware of. So if they're the ones cutting the cord, maybe the nurses are like, okay, it's ready to cut. And the partners see that it's still a little blue, a little curly. Then they're like, hey, it's not white. It's not flat. Let me wait for white. That's something to keep in mind, because delayed cord clamping can be very generalized. And I've seen some doctors say delayed cord clamping is 30 seconds. So yeah.
Yeah, just let it be. But actually, the cord isn't long. And that's what she said. The cord isn't long enough to reach your chest.
The placenta can be born and you can still keep the placenta attached to the baby. So you don't need to cut the cord before the placenta comes out. So that's something that is also an option for you. If you want to wait and you want to birth the placenta still with the baby, which is a lotus birth, you can still do that and then cut it after. So it doesn't, they don't need to be separated immediately after they're born. They can be both born and then cut the placenta after the cord.
Okay, well, I'm going to need you to advocate for me in this moment because I will be in a different world.
Yeah, for sure. And that's honestly one of the hardest parts to make the decisions when it comes to immediate postpartum because you're so like high
you're
in
like,
the
yeah,
bubble.
Yeah, do whatever.
Also, yeah, you may be in pain. They may be stitching you too, you know. So making those choices is important to talk through before. And that's why we need to do it. Something else that they do, and it's on your birth plan, is fundal massages. That's when they massage the uterus. So that's something that a lot of people don't talk about. It is painful. They do it a few times over the hour or two after birth. And so it is something that you can also deny in your birth plan. You can also say you're okay with it. It's just something good to explore and research before. And so you are aware that that will happen. And finally, two more options, immediate skin to skin, partner skin to skin. And then if you will be keeping the placenta or not, it's good to also note in your birth plan.
And I feel like hopefully hospitals understand now compared to decades ago that skin to skin is very important for mom and baby. My hospital will put baby on me right away. So I know that's definitely going to be on my birth plan. Did you keep your placenta?
No, I did not. I didn't do pills either. I didn't eat it. No.
No? The sheep eat their placenta, you know?
Yeah. And last but not least, in the birth plan, there's also more immediate postpartum options at the hospital, including the golden hour, which is uninterrupted relaxing time with your baby. And so that also includes maybe waiting to do assessments on mom and baby until after, instead of immediately. Is this something that you would want to do, the golden hour?
Of course. As soon as the baby's born, you could step out of the room, everybody.
And what about bathing the baby immediately or postponing or denying?
No, I said they have to come, go step away so they could come back later.
Do you want to bathe the baby in the hospital?
No, not even. I won't bathe them for a week.
Yeah, that's what I do. I don't bathe them for 10 days. It's good to keep the Burnix on their skin, rub it in. It's really protecting off their skin. It also eases the transition from the womb to the air, right, that they've never been exposed to. It's very hydrating and it protects them for their immunity too. It protects any bacteria. So it's something to add if you want to deny the bath. It's also something great to add in your birth plan.
Okay.
And then how about bottle feeding, formula feeding, or breastfeeding on your birth plan?
So I have breastfeeding on my birth plan. So
okay,
I'm thinking I'll get hooked up with a lactation nurse right away, or you can help me get that going.
Yeah, it's also something great to add in your birth plan. If you do want a lactation consultant to come into the room, that is a great note to add. Sometimes it takes 24, 48 hours to come visit you. So yeah, I'll definitely be there in the meantime, which is good. And the last thing is hepatitis B, vitamin K shots, and eye cream. What are your immediate thoughts on that?
The immediate thoughts on that is I want to know if they're absolutely necessary. So that's research that I want to do on my own. If I don't have any hepatitis B exposure, I don't even know how to go about that because I have to do research first.
Yeah, for sure. So something that I always say, do the research beforehand. Don't make decisions at the hospital. And something else is that in a few episodes, we actually have an incredible pediatrician who will be joining us to chat about all of the immediate newborn options, including vaccines, hepatitis B, vitamin K, eye cream. So we will ask him all about the immediate postpartum care for the newborn at the hospital and at home. It will also give you more ideas maybe on what to do.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, I'll look forward to that. So this is all for today. If you haven't listened to the first part of the birth plan, you could go back one episode before this. And in next week's episode, we are going to discuss all the things your partner can support you during labor, whether that be your husband, your girlfriend, a boyfriend, sister, or mom. For me, that'll be you, Laura, and Nate. So this way, you know, you're informed and you'll know exactly how everyone in the room can support you in the way that you want to be. So make sure you subscribe to the pod so you don't miss that one and any future episodes to come.
Yay. Follow us also on Instagram at MomFriendsPod for all the behind the scenes updates and more.
Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.